Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the last three men watching NXT. That's a working title. It's called PWT Talks NXT, but if I can push that through, I'm going to. We are talking NXT for June the 7th, 2022. A real mixed bag of... We had six matches, bangers one and all. Okay, all but about five of them were bangers. There were six. We're going in new directions. There's stuff to talk about. There always is, but we'll get there. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Let's talk main event tag team, wacky tag team antics going on here. Solo Sikoa and Apollo Crews versus Carmelo Hayes and Grayson Waller. Apollo Crews re-debuts on NXT for the first time since 2016. He is just straight up normal baby face, not using the accent that he put on, and is positioned as a near top of the card guy. He had his segment earlier on with Bron Breakker. We can go ahead and we can just put that in with our main event discussion, because Bron Breakker showed up just before the halfway point in this show, and he did a little mic time. Apollo Crews came out to kind of make an informal challenge. It was face-face, so if they're going to make Apollo a heel, they got the babyface pop out of the way, knowing that he's going to get that pop when he goes down there, because he was there, he was beloved, and I think a lot of people are upset that he didn't do better on the main roster. He's had some success, but he had to put up with a lot of jobs before he got there. So maybe this is the thing where they re-debut him as a face, but he will be a heel before long. Not sure there. Not sold there either way. But at any rate, it seems like he will be one of the next major challengers for Bron Breakker. Could he be the challenger in 4 weeks? I don't know. But at any rate, Solo Sikoa was supposed to be in a handicap match against Carmelo Hayes and Grayson Waller in the main event. But Sikoa said, there's somebody who dislikes you as much as I do. Not sure why Crews has any issue with these guys, but he does. apparently just being a good guy who exists is enough. And this match at 13:46 was, I'm going to say, the only good match on the show. hate to say
You're
it.
Damn right.
Get
You're
the good
right.
match out of the way first. But there's some clunkiness and some weirdness to cover as we get to the rest of the show. We got a full house here. So that's good. Bruce, why don't you tell me who you are and what you thought of the main event?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I thought the main event was good fun. It's weird that with these sort of NXT returns, regardless of who you are, I mean, think about Dolph Ziggler or think about Natalya, and now we have even the Viking Raiders. And then tonight we have Apollo Crews. It doesn't matter what their character disposition was on the show they were before. They come back and they're automatically facing. I kind of touched on this yesterday with Zach Hadorn on the Raw post show about Edge. It's like, oh, he got jumped by his own faction who are heels, so that makes him a face. That kind of logic is a bit off, right? So for Apollo just coming back, making him a face is always a bit interesting. Just because that's what they always do, regardless of if they were just heels. So granted here, I don't think he's been on TV for a while. So it helps in that regard. But still, just them coming back, making them faces automatically is a weird thing in pro wrestling, because no matter what promotion it is, that usually is what happens. I think we got to see a lot of good things in the main event, a lot of things that make the three of the 2.0 class in this match sort of why people see so much potential in the three of them, and they kind of showed a lot of that here tonight. Apollo added a nice bit of power to the main event. And I did like the ending, how Waller's finish, the counter, led directly into Apollo's finisher without it seeming too scripted. It kind of just worked because of how Waller always goes into his neckbreaker and how Apollo always starts his powerbomb with the belly-to-back angle. So I did like that. With the promo earlier in the night, or Apollo Crews re-debuted, I should say, as he's walking out, you know, mind you, Braun Breaker just talked about who's next, who wants to step up. And then as Apollo Crews is walking out, Wade Barrett goes, "What are his intentions?" And I'm like, really, dude? What are his intentions? Didn't Braun Breaker just lay out what the intentions were? So I did like it was a little different here, that Apollo Crews didn't immediately call for a title shot and said that he would see him sometime down the road, so that it wasn't just like, oh, I'm getting the title shot by seniority. He's like, no, I'll make my way to the title eventually. So maybe it'll be 4 weeks, maybe it'll be longer, but I think someone from Raw and SmackDown, who, even though they didn't have a lot of success, as they said tonight, is a former Intercontinental and United States champion, does help add a little bit of star power to NXT 2.0, which has been lacking a bit of that. Regardless of how we feel about some of these younger acts, they don't have as much time yet to have developed into big-time draws. So having someone that has been on a show that draws 1 point, however many million viewers, sometimes two, depending on what show they're on, I think that'll help NXT overall. And Apollo is a good wrestler, going back to his days at UHA, so he should help in terms of match quality as well.
Yeah, it just seems like you're kind of shooting for a little dumber audience here. an audience that doesn't care about what was on before. With the what are his intentions? It just seems like that kind of little thing is all over the show right now. And certainly they're having good guys cheat a lot.
Yep, a lot.
They commit crimes kind of a lot. It just seems like it's not aiming very high. And if that sounds like I'm being mean to the writers, then honestly, it's not mean enough, because they should, if they're listening, they should be deeply hurt by what I'm saying. I want what I'm saying to wound them. This is not all that hard to make good guys act good and bad guys act bad. But
real quickly,
go ahead.
Apollo Crews also lost his accent suddenly, and I noted that on Twitter, and some people are trying to torch me like, it's fake. I go, I know it's fake. That's not the point. He just suddenly lost the accent, the fake accent that they gave him for his character, with this music too. So,
I would have absolutely died if somebody said to him, hey, aren't you supposed to be Nigerian?
Yeah, if Breaker was a heel champ, he would have busted out that line, that's for sure. But because he's a face, they didn't bring that up. Because no one else discussed Apollo tonight, it wasn't brought up. But if he's feuding with Hayes and Trick Williams, who Trick Williams had the best night on the mic of anybody tonight, I think they could really make Apollo look bad by bringing that kind of stuff up. So.
Yeah, it's high praise, being better on the mic than your Tony D's and your Mandy Rose's. I'm gonna say some nice things tonight. I'm almost positive, but I've got some things that are not so nice to say too. Nate, we heard your voice. Let's hear it some more.
All right. Sounds good. At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses. I don't have it up on pwtorch.com for you guys yet, because I didn't actually get a chance to start NXT until almost 9 o'clock tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern time. So I crammed 2 hours into one. So I might be I might have missed a few things here and there tonight, but whatever. I still wanted to do the show. Main event. I'm a huge proponent of Apollo Crews coming back. I'll never forget the first time I saw Apollo Crews in the ring. It was his debut match on NXT back in 2016. I had heard the name Urination, but I was not familiar with him, like his body of work whatsoever. I knew the internet liked him, but it was about it. when I first saw him do that standing moonsault and do it as crisp and as cleanly as he does, my jaw dropped. And this, again, this is back in 2016, my jaw dropped. And I still very vividly remember saying to myself, holy crap, this guy is going to, like, he's going to the moon, right? And that didn't quite happen for him on the main roster. I mean, he had, like, you know, Kelly said a little bit ago, he had some success. But for the most part, I mean, you know, I'm looking at his match history right now on cagematch.net. And I mean, he's been on main event quite a bit in 2022. But, you know, who actually watches that show? So, you know, clearly things didn't quite work out in the way he probably wanted it to on the main roster. So I am glad to see him back down here. You know, maybe reinvigorate his career a little bit. He could always go back up to the main roster with this new gimmick as well, whether it be face or heel, to kind of get away from, you know, this Nigerian prince thing that he was doing with Commander Aziz, which also begs the question, what's going to happen to Commander Aziz? But that's not NXT. I'm just wondering. This probably was the best match of the night. You know, and I think on a normal night, I probably wouldn't be saying that. It was still a good match. Don't get me wrong. I did enjoy the fact that, you know, Apollo Crews is back here in a big way, and he kind of made quite an impact in the match. I also thought Grayson Waller and Carmelo Hayes really worked well together. A lot of times, you know, you get the singles, you know, two singles guys together, and, you know, they work together okay, but I felt like they actually had some pretty good chemistry. As Wade Barrett pointed out during the match, they have teamed before. Granted, it was in War Games, wasn't an additional tag team match, but still, you know, at least in kayfabe, they had a little bit of an explanation as to maybe why they worked so well together. But yeah, I thought this is kind of a good way to reintroduce Apollo Crews, not necessarily going directly straight for the NXT title scene as I kind of assumed what was going to happen. I didn't expect to see Apollo Crews again tonight. Although I thought it was in the back of my head that maybe he would join Solo Sikoa, but I really didn't think it was going to happen. I thought Apollo Crews is probably going to wind up showing up again the next time we saw Bron Breakker on the screen, you know, next week, or what have you. So I'm kind of glad that they are doing it this way. It's a little bit different than how they've done it, you know, with Natty didn't come. She didn't come out to really challenge for the title, but still the
Dolph.
Dolph did, you know, AJ, he didn't either, but still they come down, they kind of state their intentions, and that's the way that they go. This is a little bit of a sidebar, and I like that because it kind of allows him some time to breathe and kind of build himself up a little bit to then be a good challenger for Bron Breakker. I kind of like the storytelling there. Overall, I'm pretty high on this match, at least in comparison to the rest of the show. I don't know what else to say, so I'll just kick it back to you.
Stop there. Good show, guys. Shorter than usual. I am not wondering what's going to become of Commander Aziz. But I don't know. Maybe he's a nice guy, and I should. I'll tell you what. If they really had pronounced that name, Ura Nation, that would have been amazing. Uha Nation, but man,
yes.
Ura Nation, that would be... I feel like it would be too easy for the heels. They'd be like, you know what? I'm going to have some pity on you.
Jeff Hardy when he had Ura Nation.
You named yourself Ura Nation. I mean, Jeff Hardy named his band Proxy Y-Gen. Like, you should make fun of Jeff Hardy, people. You should. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Hey, let's tell you how. 515-605-9345. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We got three emails. We got one caller. So we are going to go to our friend Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, thanks for waiting. And what'd you think?
Pretty good show. My first question's on Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade. WWE has a history of not keeping friends together. So you think they'll wait till they get to the main roster to have them feud with each other? You think it's going to be a feud that we see in NXT between these two? And you think we'll play the heel in this? I would think Cora Jade would be the heel, but I'd like to see what you think.
You know, I am so conditioned to seeing friends beat each other up. I thought it might happen here.
Me too.
Because it would have been perfect for Jade to steal her moment.
That's exactly right. How I was thinking.
Yeah, I really thought it would happen here. So we all thought the same thing. And maybe that's just, yes, they've conditioned us to do that. But I do agree with you that there's something there. I don't know that it makes sense necessarily, Cora as a heel. But NXT, we're going to get an email later too about them wanting NXT fans to have short memories. And I understand that it's kind of irritating that we have to keep recalibrating what we think about certain characters and how, like, Zion Quinn is, like, face or heel every week.
He's an asshole every week. At the very
least. Yeah. He's always a dick. I never like him. But sometimes I'm supposed to like him. I just think that this is – NXT is the place for – training to happen, and some of that cross training is to see what they have as a face and what they have as a heel. So they're taking these talents that seem like they're no doubt in the role they're already in, and they're going to try them on the other side of the aisle. And if that doesn't work, that doesn't matter. They can always just bring Cora up as a babyface and pretend the NXT stuff never happened, because that's kind of what they're doing now. I do think they won't continue this story on the main roster. That's not how things are done right now. They're not even really referring back to that stuff all that much, other than to say who champions were and things like that, because it gets to be a real mess when you're talking face and heel alignments and all that. I do think that at some point this will be a feud. We're here, so let's talk about the match too. Roxanne Perez with the Pop Rocks defeats Tiffany Stratton in 12:19. After the match, Toxic Attraction makes some threats and say, "Hey, don't you even?" It's all Mandy Rose on the mic. Cool.
Good.
It says
the other two.
No. I mean, it's a race to the bottom.
Exactly.
But Mandy, for me, is not the best or the worst. She might be the worst, but she's definitely not the best. Okay, anyway. So she makes some threats to Roxanne Perez. "Hey, you, why even bother?" And, you know, doing some basic heel stuff, like she obviously doesn't want any part of having to face Roxanne Perez. This match, unfortunately, was really slow and really clunky. In the last 4, maybe 5 minutes, they kind of found something, but this was real deliberate. This definitely seemed like a PC match. These are super young talents. Add their ages together and you don't get mine, which just made me really sad. But it is true. I think I probably have a year or two on them if you add their ages together.
Too old.
I'm just barely older than the two of them together, but I think I am. So anyway, this was rough. 12:19 was a lot to ask out of these two. Now, far be it from me to say, "Hey, tournament final should have been shorter," but this final should have been shorter. Nate.
I don't know if I could have said it better myself. This tournament match should have been a heck of a lot shorter. Man, for a match that was called, a breakout tournament final, I really want to know who broke out here.
Cora Jade.
Yeah, probably. This, and I hate saying it because I'm high on Tiffany Stratton, I'm high on Roxanne Perez, but I don't know if they just didn't have the chemistry in the ring tonight. They don't have the the in-ring time to just kind of be able to go out there and put on a 12-minute match. And by in-ring time, I mean, training and just like, I mean, like Kelly said, they're super young. They're super young in their careers. So I don't know, but there was plenty of times this match where I'm just kind of like, what are you guys doing? Like there was a time, Roxanne whipped Tiffany Stratton into the ropes. Tiffany Stratton like barely hits the ropes and bounces back. Just little things like that that really took me out of the match. Some mistimed spots, a little bit of sloppy transitions here and there. It just seemed like a regular Tuesday match, like Tuesday night match that they just gave a few extra minutes to, maybe seven extra minutes to, because usually those matches are about 5 minutes long. It didn't work for me. It really didn't. It made me kind of, it almost made me a little less high on Stratton and Roxanne, to be honest with you. And that's not where I want to be. I want to, you know, see these guys grow. But from what I saw out of them tonight, it was a bit clunky. It was a bit clunky in plotting. And then the post-match angle, I also thought Cora Jade was going to turn on Roxanne Perez. I really did not expect Toxic Attraction to come out. Once they did, I'm like, okay, it makes sense. But like you guys, I thought Cora Jade was going to wind up turning on Roxanne Perez and would wind up seeing them feud before Perez wound up cashing in that contract. But Toxic Attraction came out. Indy Hartwell came out to make the save. I kind of like the addition of Indy Hartwell here, simply because she's not doing a whole heck of a lot. Indy was on our TV every single week for a long time. I mean, at least, God, about a year now, right? You know, between The Way and everything going on with Dexter Lumis and all of that. She was on our TV quite a bit, and she's a character I really like. She's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but I really like the character of Indy Hartwell. So I kind of like the fact that she came out and, she's kind of part of this now. She's had a couple backstage interactions with Jade and Perez as well. So it kind of makes sense a little bit, not just kind of out of the blue. But overall, like I did like that, the post-match stuff, for what it was. But the match itself, yeah, it really left a lot to be desired as far as I'm concerned.
Bruce.
So clunky, yes. There are clearly spots that were botched, clearly miscommunication, clearly spots where there was obvious communication. And it's tough because last week Nate and I discussed how when you look at how the bracket turned out, it was Lyons' injury. These were probably the two women you'd want to have in there to put on the best in-ring quality match. And for some reason, there are just times when people don't click, and this could be one of those. Mandy Rose and Dakota Kai had that kind of a match not too long ago, after all. Not to say that Mandy Rose is on the same level, but it was just very bad. You know, I'm still high on both of them, of course. It's just this match as a showcase did not come off well for either, really. And you think about how, I mean, that finisher, the Code Red, the Pop Rocks, it looked like Roxanne Perez took more of the bump than Tiffany Stratton did there. So there were a couple things where it didn't look too good. And to end like that also was a bit, what's the word? Not a sour taste in my mouth, but just kind of like, huh. So the post-match angle, as soon as Cora Jade got out there, I said, oh, here she is taking the spotlight of Roxanne Perez. So, again, it could be the conditioning. It could just be that I'm not a big fan of Cora Jade and I'm conditioned, so I just don't think that highly of her. But I do think the eventual feud between them with a heel Cora Jade is going to kind of be like what Kai and Tegan Nox was supposed to be like before Tegan Nox's injuries piled up too much. The thing is, Cora Jade, you know, turning her heel, it can't be worse than what they're doing right now, so at least try it.
And I think, I don't know, she's gotten spotlights here and there. And I thought she's been fine in some ways. I think all three of these have real glaring issues in part of their game. Like, you both say you're both high on both of these two. I'm high on Roxy as a wrestler, and I'm high on Stratton as a character. But I am very in question about both of them on the other side of the aisle, because Stratton for me has not had a good match. She's had some acceptable ones. I have not had a match, seen a match of hers that I didn't think looked overly rehearsed and practiced. And at a certain point, for me, it just kind of is a lot like sitting in my first year acting class, seeing somebody act for the 10th time and being like, man, it's time to drop the major. That's a real thing, by the way, sitting by my friend Ben, and we all had to do a dialect, and one of them had to do Italian, and she was
gabagool.
She was bad enough when she was in her own voice, but she tried to do Italian, and she just put her hand out like the stereotypical Italian thing,
like Tony D'Angelo.
Yes. But didn't do the voice. She put her hand out, but didn't do the voice. And my friend Ben turns to me and he whispers, maybe you should have dropped the major.
Bobbidi-bobbidi.
Every time we saw somebody who sucked for the rest of my 4 years there, it was, maybe you should have dropped the major. We've said it about people we've seen on stage that weren't since then.
That's fantastic.
So, yes. I should have brought that into the podcast years ago. But now it's here, and now we can be happy it's here.
Instead, you brought in jars of mayonnaise. I don't get it.
That was Justin.
Okay.
That was Justin. So, yeah, that one goes back like 4 years. Anyway, Ryan, hopefully we didn't lose you in this ridiculous trip we just took. What else do you have for us?
My second question is on Mr. Stone. Is he in danger of being released? Because it seems like he might be written off on the Sophie Cromwell angle, or they just have him be placed with a different wrestler after he loses his client to the nice-looking girl.
This is not the first time that I have been wondering if Mr. Stone was not long for this company. I'll say this. Changing a name or giving somebody a name is not proof that they're going to stay around, but it's proof that somebody thinks that they're worth putting energy into. So they took him and they rebranded him slightly, but they rebranded him. So somebody believes that they've got something here that they're going to move forward with. So for me, there's a couple things that he could be there for. He might be somebody that they want to move to the main roster, but they want to find the right marriage of wrestler to manager. You're not going to find another Lesnar Heyman or even a Roman Heyman, but maybe you'll get lucky and you have something. So maybe he's there for that. And he might also be there. This is the other option for me, and it's, I don't know, this is like glass half empty, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was there and the intent was purely for him to be like somebody to help other talents through things. There's no internal intent to move Stone to the main roster. So he's just literally like he's helping people in an unofficial capacity that he doesn't even realize he's in.
Are you saying he's an unofficial player coach?
Yes, I am. And like, is that maybe what Robbie is doing there and will just be continued to do? And when he's on his 40th wrestler, he's like, hey, I smell a rat. this is a little fishy here. And I say 40 is a joke, but he's already on like number 6 or 7 when you consider all the people that are gone. And when Sophia Cromwell started being added into the picture, I thought, oh yeah, this is definitely muscling Stone out. That's how they made it look. But it could be a stable. I don't know. None of it's going to matter if they keep jobbing Wagner out in matches he shouldn't.
Especially when faces are the ones who are cheating.
Yep. Josh Briggs defeats Von Wagner in your opener In your opening match, you had two plotting big guys go 303 and the babyface won by cheating. So, yeah, if you're jumping on to NXT. Yes. If you're jumping on to NXT for the first time ever this week, what is making you stay? maybe the In Your House recap is like, okay, well, that match sucked, but at least that recap suggested that there's cool stuff going on, maybe. But Briggs over Wagner at 303. Wagner's gotten out, but you're not trying to create outs for... Look, I'm not going to die on the hill of Von Wagner. It's just Von Wagner. But if you humanize your monster too much, you don't have a monster anymore. Bruce?
Well, that also requires that Von Wagner has the ability to be humanized. He's just so robotic in a lot of things.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So there's that. Like you said, it's odd when you have not only the babyfaces winning by cheating. I almost said nefarious means because I couldn't think of the word cheating. Not only do you have that, but you have the babyfaces also being the ones that cause the distraction. And they had to have it already in mind that this was going to happen because of how they looked at each other and knew what the plan was. So it was premeditated. So yeah, babyface is premeditating their distraction and cheating, even worse in pro wrestling terms. So the match was a match. I don't really remember much of the match, to be honest with you, because it was just there. I do think that there being more so in the beginning when Sophia Cromwell first kind of debuted, the announcers never really mentioned her too much in terms of her name, but more and more recently they started to name her. So I think they're starting to work her into the whole picture, and I keep saying that she's going to be the one to help take she's going to basically take Von Wagner away from Mr. Stone. I almost said Robert Stone, but away from Mr. Stone. And then I wouldn't be surprised if this is a way for them to get Mr. Stone back to be an active competitor in the ring. He's great at being a manager, but he can still also go in the ring. So he'd be perfect for that kind of comedic lower mid-card heel that a lot of faces on the up and up. You know, he could be a perfect opponent for Nathan Frazer right now, for example, to kind of just look good and go over and kind of have some memorable spots because of his because of Stone's over-the-top characterizations. But I just don't really care about Briggs, Jensen, Henley, Wagner, almost forgot his name, Wagner. So yeah, this was a weird way to start. They started the show with a promo, but the first match of the show, this was kind of, I guess, set the tone for what the rest of the show would be like.
You know, you say you don't remember this match very much, and a little insider info for you out there, folks. You always remember the match about 1,000 times more if you have to recap it.
Yes.
Very, very easy. So let me recap this match for you. Most of the match was me typing, Briggs got back into it with punches. That is most of what this match was.
Mate. That sounds about right. That sounds about right from what I remember. I'm pretty much in agreement with Bruce, like 100% here. This was a match that happened on the show tonight. It was not overly entertaining. It had a very strange finish. We talked about it a little bit ago. You know, heels or faces cheating to win, and you know that happened here with Briggs grabbing Jensen's cast and you know hitting Von Wagner with it. I don't know. I mean, in a way, I guess fine. You know, you're protecting Von Wagner from a clean loss, but why have him lose in the first place then? I don't know.
It's not like Briggs has been built up to be anything, you know, hot stuff.
Yeah.
Or anything, so.
And I mean, maybe that's what they're trying to do. I mean, between Briggs and Jensen, and this isn't a hard thing, I guess, but I mean, Briggs is the standout between the two. And I'm not saying he's like the Shawn Michaels standout between him and, Marty Jannetty. couldn't think of his name for a second. I'm not saying he's like that type of a standout, but he's definitely the standout between the two. So I don't know, maybe this is them trying to test the waters a little bit and see if he can, you know, be a singles competitor or potentially raise the stock of, you know, his tag team or something like that. I don't really know. But yeah, like you said, it's not like he's being built up or he has been built up to be some sort of a big player. So to get a win over Von Wagner just kind of seems a little, I don't know, it seems strange. Von Wagner is the one that they've been building up to be this monster. He really hasn't come across as that much of a monster. Maybe a little bit the last time we saw him when he was like eating people all over the ring and outside, you know, into the, I forget who the hell it was that he threw onto the announce table. Was it Wesley? It might've been Wesley. Don't remember.
It was Wesley and Jiro, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. It's both of them. And, so, I mean, like, that's kind of cool, like, that the fact that he's got that strength and that power and everything like that, but the booking for him so far has just been kind of abysmal, and not to mention, his ring attire does not help his perception whatsoever. I look at that ring attire, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, it looks like he went to www.iwantobeawrestler.com, and that was just, like, some attire he picked out on there. It looks very indie. Like he's got to do something, you know. I'm not saying he needs to have like Ric Flair robes or anything like that, but give me something. Give me something a little bit more than just that. Because it
even
really
Ric
does...
Flair robes aren't gonna help him, man.
Well, no, I know that, but like his that attire where it is just so plain and generic. Mm-hmm. To me, it just screams like they still don't know what they want to do with this guy. Like, give me something a little bit more. Even if you took that stupid red stripe away and just had him wrestle in black pants, I feel like that would be better. But that little red stripe really bothers me.
It's kind of funny you say that, because Riddick Moss now, or Madcap Moss, is now just plain black trunks and plain black boots, and it's so much better than what it was before.
Absolutely. I think he looks a hell of a lot better than it did before. I mean, when he came out in Hell in a Cell against Baron Corbin, like, I was like, all right, who is this guy? When I went to SmackDown a few weeks ago, well, actually, Jesus, probably 6 weeks ago at this point. I called into the Wade Killer post show, and, you know, Wade asked me about Madcap Moss, you know, if I think he, you know, what I thought about him and him, you know, kind of being like, some sort of, some kind of a star. And, like, at the time, I'm like, yeah, I know that's kind of, like, what, you know, the rumor mill, that's what they're saying they wanted to build him up to be. But, man, when I actually saw him, like, come out of the back of that ambulance on, I forget if it was Raw or SmackDown, but all the shows blend together at this point. But coming out of the back of that ambulance and then showing up at Hell in the Cell, he was, like, super reinvigorated. So, I mean, like, just plain black can work. That little red stripe on his attire, and I know I've gone on way too much about just his pants, but it just screams indie, and it makes it hard for me to get behind him as a badass. And that's just one thing, as well as, you know, the rest of the booking and all of that. Kind of to go over to Ryan's question, though, about, like, you know, Robert Stone and Sophia Cromwell and everything. Robert Stone certainly feels redundant at this point. Doesn't feel like he's necessarily needed. I would not be surprised if this was, you know, some sort of way to phase him out. I was kind of thinking maybe it was a way to get him back in active competition as well. That was kind of more of like just a little thought in the back of my head. I really didn't think of it too much until you brought it up, Bruce. I do like that idea. I mean, he's still, you know, can still go in the ring. He's not a bad hand in the ring. I don't think he's really had a match in WWE with the exception of a couple joke tag team matches that I can kind of remember him being in. But, as far as like an actual active competitor, like, he hasn't. So, I mean, why not? Try something new. The Robert Stone and Mr. Stone character really hasn't taken off. There were times where I thought he was great, but they haven't really invested anything in him. We just see him coming out with Robert Stone with Von Wagner rather. We don't really hear from him very often anymore. So I'm kind of like, what is the point of having him with Von Wagner other than just to, you know, point and be like, go smash that guy, you know? So I don't know. We'll kind of see where that, goes, but I do feel like it's very redundant and that there's going to be something there. The only other thing that I can think of, if they wanted to keep him with Von Wagner and Sophia Cromwell, is to kind of make Sophia Cromwell and Mr. Stone, I'm going to use the term power couple, but I don't want to imply that like they're together either. You know, but just kind of like somehow turn them into this like power duo that's able to get shit done, whether it be with just Von Wagner or they try to, you know, reinvigorate the quote Robert Stone brand and bring other people into the mix that might be having some trouble, you know, and kind of reinvigorate them to be, hell, even up to the main event level status if they really want to put something behind them. You know, but at least like give me something, you know, mid-card, upper mid-card, where they can kind of take somebody that, you know, is down and out, reinvigorate them and kind of breathe new life back into them and put them into the mid-card, you know, upper mid-card. That'd be great, and kind of give them excuse me, some more credibility, you know, for what they're doing. But I don't really think that's the way they're going to go. I don't think they're going to be doing like that power duo thing. I really kind of think that this is, they're going to be pivoting somehow to get Robert Stone or Mr. Stone out of that little faction, that little group with Von Wagner. And Sophia Cromwell will wind up being the sole manager for the man whose eyebrows are trying to escape his face.
The good news for Robbie is that as a white guy who goes out there and says and does nothing, AEW will have plenty of work for him. He'd go there, they'll pair him with literally anyone, and you'll never think about the fact that he's there, but he's making money, appearing. For real, if they're going to hold on to him, I feel like his future, if they move him up, I think he's going to manage somebody who he never crossed paths with in NXT. Okay. Like, I think he'll be like the secret element for somebody who's already there. And I don't think it'll be high card, certainly not at the beginning. But I don't know. I got to feel like they're going around and around and around in circles with him being like, I think we got some, but what are we doing with them? And like, they say, we'll think about him later. And all of a sudden it's 6 months later. They're like, should we think about Mr. Stone? I don't know. I don't know. It's, I don't know why I root for him so much, but I really, really want it to work out for
him.
He's
entertaining.
He is.
Yeah.
And I watched him on The Amazing Race and he was perfectly likable. And they did well. Yeah. So there's that. But anyway, Ryan, once again, we go off the rails. Thank you for putting up with that. What else do you have for us?
Heavy question on Apollo Crews. I've been conditioned when watching the show, when someone invades from the main roster, that someone from NXT says, you're jumping in line for my title shot. So do you see like maybe a Joe Gacy doing this and Apollo having like a warm-up match before his championship match, or any other wrestlers come to mind that might take offense to Apollo trying to jump in line all of a sudden?
The one that jumps to mind for me is Waller. Like, for me, they're kind of on a, well, and maybe Tony D, but he's got his own storyline going. Obviously, the D Escobar thing is going to continue. Yeah, somebody should take offense to this. Obviously, he's got to work a tune-up match. Gosh, who is there even for him?
I think that's why they brought Apollo Crews down in the first place.
Yeah, right. It's not obvious who that person is. And Santos could be forced into that spot. He's in a spot where he can lose and it's not a big deal because he's gotten out to losing, because he's not doing it for himself. So he's not energized and he's going to be at odds with D'Angelo. So that definitely is one way to go. Gacy, I don't think so. I think Gacy is going to be far away from the title picture for a bit. He could gatekeep. That is possible. But I think that his story with – I'm really, really eager to see who he's bringing up, because he's like, your other names don't matter anymore. And I'm like, oh, they're telling us not to call two people that we know by names by their names. Mm-hmm. But I haven't even given it any thought yet, so I don't know who to expect this to be. I think he'll be around. I'm assuming that because they got this ball rolling today and they only have 4 weeks to go to Great American Bash, I'm assuming this ends at Great American Bash. I'm going to assume that Cruz does the job to Breaker at Great American Bash. As for who that tune-up could be, not obvious, but I'm also thinking potentially Cameron Grimes. I do think that Grimes has very, very, very little to do in NXT. The fact that he wasn't there tonight suggests to me that he's not figured in. Certainly not figured into Great American Bash, but maybe not even into NXT. If they want him to do one more job before he moves up, then what's the harm in doing it to a guy who's going to challenge for the NXT championship, Bruce?
I think Santos is also a good call, because Grimes would work, but I think with Santos, you also have the ability to extend the storyline and angle with Tony D'Angelo, and they're actually calling it the D'Angelo family. So Gacy also intimated as much tonight that he's not coming for the title. He said their mission is far more important than worldly possessions. And on Saturday for the roundtable, I said there's just as much chance that we'll see the Druids again than there is that we'll never see them on TV again. Well, we got the part of the wheel that says they're going to be on TV, and they're going to, like you said, they're going to be people that we already know, but with different names. And so I have no clue who that might be, and it's probably going to be two obvious people when they're revealed next week, and we're going to be like, oh, of course, of course, of course. I will be interested to see how they're presented, though, because of Gacy's gimmick right now, going from social justice warrior to Harlan is my bodyguard to I am a broke-ass Undertaker. And I just – there's a way that this can come off well, but there's a way that this can come off as Alex Abrahantes for a bit with the Death Triangle, coming out looking like he's the Grim Reaper from the Grim Adventures of – was it Buck and Mindy? Whatever cartoon that was. So it's going to be interesting. I do think the tag team division right now is looking pretty entertaining, or at least intriguing, because not just what happened with the Druids, and there's a segment we'll get to later, but, you know, you just know if Malik Blade are getting more TV time, and I joked on Twitter that on Saturday, Idris Inofe looked like Dr. Umar, and tonight he looked like 1990s LL Cool J. So, yeah, he's doing work. He's doing good work. He's very talented, and I have a feeling that what we see from these two and from the Druids next week is going to set the tag team division up for a good summer.
You know, we joked about Dante Chen, but could one of them be Dante Chen?
Oh, that's my joke. You took my joke.
I'm not sure I'm joking. I think that Dante Chen might be one of these guys.
They're too tall to be Dante Chen and Guru Raj.
Are they that tall?
They're taller than Gacy, and Dante Chen is definitely not taller than Gacy.
Is it the stunning return of the Ely brothers?
Someone said they could be Grizzly Young Veterans, but one of them is definitely too tall to be Drake.
I don't know, that would be
disappointing.
Also, this one of them, white. I think they're white. They look white. At least their hands look white.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if one of them's tall enough to be, but there is one person that has been off of NXT TV for a while, and the rest of his stable is now up on the main roster, and that is Giovanni Vinci, also known as Fabian Aichner. That's throwing that up there.
He got his own promo.
He got his own vignette.
That's completely disparate from what they've presented Gacy's Druid to be.
All right.
Yeah,
I forgot I forgot all about
that. Spirit Squad or something.
Skull and Eight Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Aces and Eights. Who knows?
But, like, as far as, like, another competitor for Breaker, like, I'm looking up and down this roster.
I mean, that was the big question we had coming out of Saturday was who's next for Breaker, and they have to go get someone from Raw and SmackDown to be his next opponent, basically.
I mean, you know, I'm looking up and down the roster on WWE.com for just, you know, NXT specifically, and the only name that actually stands out to me as, like, somebody with star power is Wade Barrett, and that's not a good sign. You know, Cameron Grimes, wow, they're still showing Cameron Grimes as a North American champion on the website. That's weird. But Cameron Grimes comes to mind, but, like, with the exception of him, I'm not even thinking Santos Escobar, because I don't think he's going – I don't think they're going to mix that story in with the main roster or the main
there's
event.
There's someone obvious we're missing for Breaker. Duke Hudson has a DQ victory over him from last week.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's a TV title defense, but it's a title defense.
Yeah.
Okay, real question. Did Boa get fired?
No, but somehow he got renamed to Big Boa.
Oh, for dumb. Could he be one of the two guys?
He could be. Actually, he could be, especially with his character, how it was trending before he went off TV.
Right. I like him. I like him better than not being on TV.
Boa and Dante Chen, let's go. A white guy leading two Asian dudes.
There you go.
GYV, maybe? We haven't seen them in a while.
No, we talked about that. Drake is way too short.
Nate, where were you? Nate, you were right here.
Probably looking up and down this roster, not paying attention.
Actually, looking at the roster, you're doing the Lord's work. Thank you. Ryan, if you got one more.
Final questions on Braun Breaker. Last week, I don't know if you caught this, but Joe Gacy claimed that Braun has a brother that he used to play with, and his brother encouraged it. Is he someone that's interested in wrestling? Is that possibly like a storyline they could do? Is like he gets corrupted by Gacy and he goes after his brother's championship?
So I don't know a lot about Braun's brother. As for whether he's interested in wrestling, I'm going to say yes, because learning a trade or a skill that requires brains, probably not the Steiner way. Like, it's possible, but we've all heard them do interviews. So, yes, I don't know that this person would be interested in that, but it would not be a first time if a sibling was brought in. For storyline purposes, I thought they did that to very good effect with the many Harts out there. Keith Hart, Bruce Hart, these are names I know because of the long-form stories they were telling with the Harts in the mid to late 90s. I don't know that he is somebody that is in the cards. I have not heard as much about them hiring him, and they seem to be pretty transparent about who they are and are not hiring. So they would have to kind of go a different way and not, I guess it could have slipped through the cracks and I missed it, but I don't know of any other of the Rex Steiner family being hired.
Yeah.
Nate, go ahead.
Sorry. I didn't mean to just jump in, but I was kind of like just Googling it a little bit while you were talking. And so there's Maverick and there's Hudson, and neither one of them. Yeah, right. And neither one of them seemed to have any interest in wrestling. I think it was Maverick he's a football guy. I was looking at his Instagram and everything's like football or NASCAR or something like that. There really didn't seem to be anything about wrestling. And then I think it was Hudson seems to be the younger one, and I don't know if he'd be really old enough to do any of this stuff yet. I can't really find anything about him wrestling either. So I don't know. I mean, it like, you know, like you were saying, it wouldn't be the first time they've brought in like non-wrestling, you know, family to kind of, hype up a story. I mean, hell, there was Don Wilson's father, Al Wilson, I don't know why the hell my memory just went to him out of everybody, but God. But yeah, you know,
who wasn't even her real, that was an actor. He couldn't act,
exactly.
But he was an actor that they hired.
Shelton Benjamin's mama.
There you go.
Or that, you know. But yeah, I don't think that they have, I don't see anything anyway, just, you know, kind of like in a 2-minute Google search that they've hired or are going to be working with anybody else in the Steiner clan.
Anything about the other Steiners like Goose and Iceman?
No, it was always fun.
Ripley. Bruce, go ahead.
There's really nothing much I can add aside from we've already seen NXT bring in Breaker's family members into this, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them. But yeah, I have nothing else to add besides that.
Oh, I'm a moron. I take that back. It looks like Maverick Rick Steiner has got some amateur wrestling stuff up on YouTube. But that doesn't necessarily translate into pro wrestling, but maybe there's something there. Maybe there is something there.
Yeah. I think, we could be his wingman anytime.
You're going to keep going down the road, aren't you?
I can't help it. I haven't even seen the new one. Like, I wasn't interested in it until I heard it was good against all.
I haven't even seen the first one, so.
It's been a long time since the first one.
It's rock stupid. Like, it's amusing. It's worth seeing one time, but it's super dumb. And I've heard everyone has said, like, I can't believe how much better this one is than the first one. But there you go. Thank you as always, Ryan. Let's go to some other stuff. There's three mostly quickie matches that we didn't cover. We didn't really cover Fraser Escobar. Fraser gets a win on TV. That's worthwhile, but it wasn't even about him. Like, if I wasn't covering the show, I would not be thinking of Nathan Fraser right now. I would be thinking about the storyline with Escobar, and I wouldn't even be thinking about the fact that Fraser wrestled. I really wouldn't. This was 11:53. God, how was it that long? It was so...
Wow, was it?
They could have gotten this storyline match out in like 3 minutes. They really could have. Again, I'm not begging for fewer minutes or anything like that. I don't need a certain amount to make me happy or anything. But this didn't need 12 minutes to tell the story they were telling. But they had like 17 people at ringside, so I guess you got to take a little time for that. Pretty Deadly beat Andre Chase. Pretty Deadly, the only heels to win on this show, and that's because they were facing one guy who's 90 pounds when he's wet and wearing boots. They beat him in 3 minutes and 16 seconds. When Thea Hale could not manage the hot tag.
that just sounds so ridiculous.
Alba Fire defeated Tatum Paxley in 2:38 in a match that also didn't super click. It was fine. I don't know. Sentons suck, okay? They're not great moves, and they usually look like they don't connect. My favorite thing...
Unless you Jeff Hardy yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. My favorite thing about the former Kaylee Ray, they don't even call it the KLR bomb. They had to go back to calling it the Gory bomb because it's not named after... I mean, they could have said the Fire bomb, which, oh, my God, it's right there.
That's what I called it
right
the first night.
It's right there. Okay.
I wonder if the censors or something wouldn't let them say it.
Maybe. I mean, they're certainly being weird now. There were no holy shiznit chants today. Maybe they're being told, like, hey, you'll be removed.
Hey, they let it happen. They let it happen in your house, though. I mean, granted, it was on Peacock. You know, streaming on Peacock wasn't necessarily on, like, cable TV. But still, they allowed the holy shit chants to go without censoring it. So,
in fairness, there were no moments tonight where that would happen. Like, I thought for a second they were going to chant, "This is awesome," after a near fall in Stratton Perez. And I was like, no, the
awesome.
Hell, it is not. Like, this is average. Chant, this is average.
I like that one.
Yeah, there were no holy blank. Maybe that's their way of avoiding holy shit chants, is by not doing anything cool.
Speaking of chants, Last night, during the Judgment Day angle, a fan or someone said, I can see clearly now. And wrestlers say that so much that just one time I want the crowd to yell out, the rain is gone. Just one time while they're trying to say that.
I would yell it out if I was there.
Me too.
One other guy my age or older looks over at me and is like, hell yeah, man. Kids are like, what's happening? Yeah, it's there you go. Fire over Paxley, 238. Senton, she's so good. Just let her use something. She's probably doing the finisher she wants to do, but it's not a good finisher. So whatever. Bodie Hayward was attacked. That was before that match. Giovanni Vici, we've already kind of talked about that. Fabian Aichner. What I said in my recap is this is essentially an American with an interesting name being changed to John Smith. That's really what this was for me. This is like Harv and Gurv Sira being changed to the Singh brothers because 1/6 of people in India are named Singh. So they had to be named Singh, even though that's not their name. They just are like Oleg Prudius, which I think is an awesome badass name, being changed to Vladimir Kozlov, because that's what Vince thinks every Russian is named. Yeah, that's what they do. So there you go. I think we covered it. Zion Quinn, Gacy, and the Dyad. I wrote it D-Y-A-D. I guess the screen will tell me, but I'm assuming that's what it'll be. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else there. I will go to an email. First, this is from Zach Barber. Fellas, it's been a while since I've emailed, mostly because I haven't been watching. But when I read about Fabian Aichner being changed to Giovanni whatever the hell, I couldn't resist. This whole renaming people has gotten wildly out of hand. It was bad enough when names were changed when someone like Punishment Martinez became Damian Priest upon arriving in NXT, or when a name got shortened or changed on the main roster. Changing someone's name character within NXT when they've been on TV for months or years is just absurd and is becoming a regular occurrence. It requires the entire audience to completely shut their brains off and pretend that they've never seen someone who was just on their TV last week. A name change that like this has been done in a transparent and logical only once that I've ever seen. This was WCW in 1994. When Ray Traylor was stripped of his nightstick and the name The Boss by on-screen commissioner Nick Bockwinkel at Spring Stampede and became the Guardian Angel. The gimmick was terrible, but at least they went to the trouble of explaining the change. WWE doesn't put forth that effort. They just rely on their audience not to care. It's just another slight against a fan base they supposedly care about. Zach in Texas. So I understand the necessary evil of name changes, but the amount of name changing that this company does is so crazy. Like, a name change alone is not going to get somebody over. And I really feel like there are people whose jobs depend on it, who are desperate to change a name and then take credit for any positive response that the talent gets. I just feel like when you fill a writer's room with a 1,000 people, you're going to come up with something that is so saturated and so bland that all of a sudden you've had 4,000 pitches for somebody's names and you end up with Butch. Everybody like Butch. It's just, I don't know why I know why they want to change names. It's for branding. They want names that people can chant. A first name with 2 syllables, a last name with 1. Tried and true. And if it's the other way around, you can just chant their last name and it's not so weird. I get why this is done. But it is kind of self-parody, the amount that has been happening in the last handful of months. It is crazy how much has happened. So much of this happens and used to happen off screen. And when that happened, big deal. Like, we were never even aware. They were just talking about names they could use backstage. Now this is all happening on screen. And with Aichner, it was doubly annoying because he was very, very recently tag team champion on NXT. And they said, the hype segment said he was debuting next week. And then Vic, the dutiful drone he is, just saying a big debut coming next week when we're looking right at somebody that we know extremely well. I know that this is how it was done in the 90s and before, that you would just be asked to be like, hey, we're going to tell you you don't know this guy. Cool? Is that fine? I feel like you have to put in a little more effort than that. At least turn Fatu into the Sultan before you turn him into Rikishi. It happened. That to me is a lot more effort than what's going on right now. Just to use one example, make it's a difference. I'm the Sultan.
It's funny you use that example too. Kevin Owens just made a great promo on, I think it was Raw Talk or might have been, I forget. It was like a non-televised thing, just for the internet. But he was talking about Elias and Ezekiel and that whole thing. And he's like, he was talking about, yeah, you remember Fatu? He came back and he was the Sultan. I knew he was the Sultan. Anyway, if anybody hasn't seen it, check it out. It was a good promo. But I just happened to think about that. You brought it up. Anyway, that total sidebar. It has nothing to do with anything. I'm going to shut up now.
That's what most of the show has been. It's fine. Yeah. And for the one that Zach brought up here, Punishment Martinez to Damian Priest, I remember talking about that one and being like, they took an indie name, a name that sounds really indie to me, Punishment Martinez. And they gave him another name that sounds really indie to me, Damian Priest. They both sound like real try-hard names that like 80s arcade games would be if you had an emo main character. I don't know. They're, again, this goes back to not aiming all that high. They're just trying. They're just doing the obvious because they know that a certain type of fan will go along with that. But it is a dwindling segment of the fans. Anything on this email, Bruce?
Email, I will say they've kind of tried to explain Casey Catanzaro becoming Katana Chance with the announcers each time they have a match. But yeah, it's a lot. And to be fair, last week they said that Giovanni Vinci was going to debut tonight. And I guess the debut was just that he was revealed to be the old Fabian Eichner. Now facial hair. So there's that difference. And I guess that's all you need to become a new character in WWE. If we go back to the matches that you ran through, the first one with Escobar and Frazer, I was disappointed because it had the chance to be a really good standout TV match. And instead it was just an angle the entire match. There were too many starts and stops because Escobar would glare over at D'Angelo and D'Angelo would say something to Saxon two times to go to say something to Escobar and just kept going back and forth. So every time it seemed like it was going to get into another gear, it got detracted by all those shenanigans going on. So there's that. When it comes to, what was the other one that you talked about? Or the other two, I should say, that you talked about.
Chase versus Pretty Deadly and
right.
Fire versus Paxley.
So Chase Deadly, it's amazing how much crowd support Andre Chase has. And if my timeline is any indication, people really want one of those Chase U sweaters. So it's not just the arena there. There's a good backing for Chase and Chase U out and about. I think for Pretty Deadly, you need to have them go over strong. They need to regain some things. But again, I don't know how much longer they're going to be on NXT. Coming out of Saturday, I said that they're a tag team I look at, and they seem perfect for a Vince McMahon-led production. So I could see him having a lot of fun with them on Monday or Fridays. And then Fire versus Paxley, not as clunky as Stratton versus Perez, probably because Alba Fire is there and she's so experienced. Tatum Paxley, say what you want about her. The one thing about her character that is held true is that she challenges anyone and everyone and doesn't fear them at all. She's going to lose the matches, of course, but she's going to go in and challenge people. And that was established again on Saturday night. So I like how they're at least maintaining some consistency with her, even if in the ring she still has a long way to go.
Yeah, so a match like Frazer Escobar, I'm totally fine with it, with no heat, being relegated to an angle. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is doing that and then making it 12 minutes long. Because now it just looks like the two guys can't have a good match.
That's probably why, yeah.
And they absolutely can. There is literally no doubt. So why not just whet our appetites with a 2.5-minute, like, letdown? I mean, that's where the heat comes from.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is simple stuff, folks. Nate, go ahead.
But is it simple? Is it simple? All right. So I guess I'll start with the email. As far as the name changes go, I mean, we've talked about it quite a bit on the show. Granted, Zach, you probably haven't been listening if you haven't been watching. So I'm there with you. I think that the name changes, it's just, they're far too egregious. It's happening all the time. And I understand why, like Kelly was saying, it's a branding thing. You know, they want to be able to own the intellectual property, and you know, I totally get that.
But why,
however,
not do it when they first debut? And why have they not changed Dolph Ziggler's name all these years?
Well, because Dolph Ziggler wasn't a name used on the indies. But it's basically been a more recent mandate.
Some of these names are people being renamed even after they received names in WWE.
Oh, no, I get that.
Annoying about Ziggler is that I know people don't use their real names, but his name is Nick Nemeth.
Nick Nemeth, yeah.
It's such a good name.
It's perfect
for wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh. Right?
Like
it's
Ricky
better
Steamboat.
Than John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about the same in terms of chanting. Mm-hmm. It is alliterative, but he gets away with it because it's his real name.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of over this whole name change thing because it is. It's almost insulting to the fan base. Like, guys, you know, we watched her as Katana, as Casey Catanzaro for so long, and now you want us to call her Katana Chance? Like, come on. You know, Fabian Aichner, yeah, good Gunther. That was the worst. That was that was the absolute worst. I don't know if it was because it had the whole Gunther Stark Nazi thing around it, but from Walter to Gunther was just the worst.
Ludwig Kaiser is pretty bad.
Ludwig Kaiser, yeah, you know what, that is terrible. Alba Fire, to be honest, is probably the best one so far, and I still don't really like the name Alba Fire, but I feel like it did a lot to reinvigorate her character. Not that she really needed it in the first place, but I think that's probably like the best name change so far. You know, but it's still not my favorite. So yeah, that's kind of
easily my least favorite. I mean, easily. I think it sounds so one-dimensional and so obvious. And Alba means Scottish. So her name, she's Scottish, and her name is Scottish Fire.
All right, I didn't know that. So that actually makes it even worse. However, like, you know, as much as like I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the name, but I think that the name change has actually worked in her favor because I do like the presentation of Alba Fire. I don't necessarily like the name, but I do like the presentation. You know, and I like the look, the updated look, and everything for her. But yeah, all of these name changes are just. It's getting old. It really is getting old. It's like, you know, for week to week, Cruz del Toro was renamed for 3 weeks before I even realized it, you know, like absolutely insane.
He's the worst because he's never mentioned. So I always type Raul Mendoza before I have to remember that he even changed it.
Yeah,
on commentary tonight, Tony D'Angelo said blah blah, and what's his name? And I was like, even he doesn't know Cruz del Toro's name, and he's in.
So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that. Speaking of Alba Fire versus Tatum Paxley, it was a halfway decent match. I agree with what you were saying earlier, Kelly, about the senton. I got to admit, I think it was kind of impressive that she hit it, from how far away that she was. You know, certainly it was kind of an impressive move to watch, but it isn't really an impactful move.
Well, this one looked more impactful because Paxley literally wasn't looking or preparing herself. And right as she turned to start preparing herself, that's when Alba Fire landed the senton. So it looked a little more this time just because of Paxley maneuvering. But why? I mean, if the KLR bomb was finishing matches easily beforehand, why not just do it now?
Just keep it going. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, if you want to do that, Senton, like, go ahead, put it in your repertoire, you know, as a signature move, maybe win a match or two with it. Sure. Go ahead. But yeah, I agree. If, you know, use that, the KLR bomb, the Gory bomb, rename it to the Fire bomb, the Alba bomb. I don't care. Call it something, but use that as your finisher. That's really all I get to say about that match. It was okay. I like Tatum Paxley, but you know, I don't really think there's a whole lot to talk about there. Then what was the other one? Pretty Deadly versus Chase U. This was also just kind of off the rails for me. It was kind of nice to see Pretty Deadly show a little bit more fire. They weren't joking around as much. They seemed a little bit more serious in their loss. Or after their NXT title loss on Saturday. So that, I think, was probably, I mean, that was one of the highlights, I guess, of this match, if you can call it that. I also like the heart of Andre Chase, basically, you know, like seeing one of his kids get beaten down and then he's, you know, kind of goes into dad mode and is like, I'm going to fight them for my, you know, on my own and everything. I like that. But you know, I mean, Thea Hale jumping up on the apron. I'm like, well, okay, what are you going to do? All she did was slap the dude. I forget who she slapped. It was either, obviously, you know, either Wilson or I can't think of his new name either. This
Prince,
other guy.
Prince.
Elton Prince. Thank you.
Every time Kit Wilson comes up, I just want to say Kit Harington. I was like, I know that's not right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even remember which one of the ones she slapped, but you know, all she did was slap the dude, and that was it. She never made the hot tag. She didn't do anything else. So, I mean, yeah, okay, fine. You know, get her on TV, maybe, if that was their goal, but it just seemed stupid. Aren't there other male members of Chase U that could have come out and tried to help other than Bodhi? Whatever. You know, so that's kind of...
Ready, mate.
Apparently not. So I guess throw in the brand new recruit that's the female that can't get into the match because of rules. I don't know. And then Nathan Frazier versus Santos Escobar. I was really disappointed with this match. We didn't know it was going to be Nathan Frazier that was going against Escobar until Frazier came out, unless there was something that I missed. Like I said, I was kind of skipping through the show a little bit because I didn't start it until 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern time. The show was already an hour in, but so I didn't realize that Nathan Frazier was the opponent for Escobar until he came out and they said it. And I'm like, all right, cool. This is going to be great. These two are going to tear it up in the ring. And I think it was Kelly that was talking about it, but one of you guys was just talking about how the match just really never kicked into gear. It was just every time you thought it was about to, Tony D'Angelo or one of, you know, Stacks Two Dimes, they would kind of interject in the match a little bit, tell Santos Escobar what to do, what not to do, what moves to take out of his repertoire and all this stuff. And it really broke that match up into kind of being a little monotonous to watch. I do appreciate the storytelling aspect of it because, you know, Escobar, you don't expect Escobar to really bow down to D'Angelo, but like Kelly was saying, they could have easily gotten away with a 5-minute match here, 3-minute match here, and really achieved the same thing. It really seemed like they were just trying to fill TV time or something. I don't know. But this match is really disappointing for me. As far as storytelling, I'm okay with it. But in terms of the actual match, like, I wanted to see an absolute, like, just banger of a match. And that's not what we got. So kind of disappointing there. But I think I touched on all of that. So there we go.
Our second email is from JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Number one, ultimately, what is the end game for Legato being in the D'Angelo family? And in kayfabe, why would the family really want Legato in its ranks? This never ends well from a wrestling perspective. Number two, if you could pick any two factions from any promotion at any time in history that they would be forced to join together, who would they be and why? As always, love the show and go VIP.
FBI.
So the reason that the D'Angelo family wants to absorb Legato is to demean them. So kayfabe-wise, for me, it actually works.
Pure power move.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, watching it is tedious, I guess. Like, in practice, it's not going to be awesome. But kayfabe-wise, I think the story is there. If I can pick any two factions to get together anytime, why? Let's say Bullet Club right now and NWO 1999, because I want to see 45 people in one faction try to get along, because that's about the number we'd be at. It is absolutely sickening how many people NWO had at that time between Japan and the U.S. and how many Bullet Club has right now. Bullet Club right now has, I'm not kidding, I think they have like 18 or 20 members. It's insane, like the number they have between the ones that sometimes appear on the indies in New Japan Strong in L.A. and then actually in that are over in Japan. It's like, I think it's possible it's 20 guys.
I just counted. It's 17.
Oh, gosh. So close. Does it have Juice Robinson on there yet?
Does
it have Ace Austin on there yet?
It does.
Okay. Because they did get rid of a few, and then they added more than they got rid of. Like, it seemed like they were becoming reasonable. They weren't becoming reasonable. They were becoming ludicrous. Anything on this one, Nate?
I don't even remember what we were talking about because I started looking at Bullet Club. The email. Sorry, Kevin, your email. All right, let me get there. So Ultimate Endgame for Legado.
Not Kevin, JB.
Oh, this isn't Kevin. Sorry, JB. I take that back. JB's email. Endgame for Legado. The endgame is basically what Kelly was just talking about. I mean, it's humiliation. In kayfabe, why would they want them in their ranks? That's a good point. I mean, things like that never really do work out when you kind of force two people to be together or two factions to be together. I see this, you know, kind of going back into a feud between these two teams for sure. Any two factions from any promotion in any time in history forced to join the family. One's got to be the FBI, full-blooded Italians, because why not? I think Little Guido and Tony D'Angelo could put on some entertaining segments for sure. Another faction, God. I'm going to just say the Job Squad. Just say it. I don't know. That's the only other one I could really think of right now that wasn't like DX or NWO. Yeah, I can't really think of another one off the top of my head.
Third faction, Nate, you're off the podcast.
Dude, I've had a day today, man. I've had a day. I'm surprised my brain's even working right now.
You're coming at me with the blue meanie. You couldn't think of the Four Horsemen. but you were like, Al Snow had the blue meanie? Dude.
Yeah, hook it up, man. Hook it up. So I don't know. I can't think of another. Yeah, okay, fine. Four Horsemen. Why not? Actually, you know what? That would be kind of cool. That would be interesting. The more I think about that, like Ric Flair going up against, you know, trying to Ric Flair, Tony D'Angelo for Battle of Supremacy. I don't know. That could be entertaining, I guess. But yeah, that's really all I can think of there. Yeah. All right. I'm going to be done with that now.
Bruce.
So to the first part of the email, power move, I don't really know what other point there is to them wanting LDF and their family as part of their stable or whatnot. Was there more to the email before the question? I kind of got lost after the whole evolution.
No, it was just like, no, it was Legato and D'Angelo. Why is basically the question. And then the hypothetical two factions.
Okay, so if I can have any two factions joined together, we'll go with the Mean Street Posse and Aces and Nates, just for the hell of it.
Okay. I want to see Mean Street Posse and Blackpool Combat Club to see, like, three soft little bitches with those other three guys trying to toughen them up. That actually legit would be fun.
Or we could go Mean Street Posse and Main Event Mafia.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm on a TNA bin right now, but yeah, just go ahead. Perk Angle was the best angle, so.
I don't know why anybody was ever on a TNA kick. No, there were good times. There were good times. Kevin Catani sends us this. Salutations, gents. Woohoo! Apollo is back, and presumably without the fake accent and battle axe. I think it's a great move, and I'm hoping this is more than a one-week appearance. Definitely is. That said, I'm loving the women's division and the programming around Toxic Attraction. And as
wait,
new
what?
Baby... Yeah, I was going to dream about that later, but Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
There is a women's division. I like that. That's as much as... Okie dokie. And as new babyface alliances form, I'm getting more anxious to see the belts change hands. That said, who do you think will be the women to take the tag belts and the NXT championship off of Toxic Attraction? Lastly, is Solo the next NXT championship? Well, he's definitely not the next championship. I think he'll continue to be a guy, like to be a wrestler.
A human.
But as a champion, maybe. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Okay, so who's going to be the next champions in the women's division? We've been talking about that a lot. Okay, so I was on Blake and Sal's show last week. I love doing their show. It's laid back, goofy, just a good time being on their show.
Whoa, shocked
talking
at us
about.
I know, right?
let me put it this way. I can go on rants and weird. I never think about what I have to represent when I'm doing the show.
Fair
I'm
enough.
Just, I'll go off the deep end. And I go kind of off the deep end here. Like I'll jump into the, you know, into the 10-foot part of the pool. But over there, I'm way out there, folks. But yeah, it's fun to do. And I predicted all the winners of In Your House, and I got them all right except Grimes, Hayes, because they were really effectively built a red herring with Grimes being in a feud with Sokoa.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was an audible or not, I don't know, but that's why I was fooled there. I got them all right. And I got the women right. And one of my weird, okay. So I don't know what had gotten into me at that point. It was early in the day. So no chemicals were involved. And,
sure,
but Hey, early in the day, I'm saying boo. Okay. So, I was like, what if they scrapped the women's tag championships and they do a thing where Toxic Attraction goes up and they say, these are the women's championships now. You need women's tag champions. We've got them here. They go up as a faction. Mandy, as champion, challenges the women's champion on either show. Doesn't matter which. The women's champion on either show. And JC and G. In order to do this and to legitimize it, you have a team there and they're like, no, you don't just come in and be that. And then they have Gigi and JC beat that team to legitimize them. And it doesn't have to be somebody high up on the card. It can be somebody really lame, like Carmella and another Carmella.
Selena.
Just sure. But I don't mind her. I do mind Carmen. And yeah, just bring them up as champions and do that because not that I don't want to see women's tag championship matches on NXT, but they need that championship like a hole in the head. They're fine with or without it, but the main roster could use it. And so if they want to scrap the tournament there, maybe this is the reason. So this is it's way out there. I've made crazy big picture predictions over the years in wrestling. Most of them are wrong, but every now and then one of my ideas is just crazy enough that it's correct. And I'm going with this until they prove me otherwise. Bruce.
So that is a possibility I think we slightly discussed on Saturday, and I wouldn't mind that happening. My only argument against that is they've really been hammering home with Vic Joseph, especially the winner of the tournament gets a championship match of their choice. And tonight I tweeted, yeah, please don't let the winner select the women's tag team championship as their prize for winning this tournament. With what happened after, with Cora Jade coming out, Mandy Rose doing her thing, I wouldn't be surprised, cause, and I think I even said this last week, that Perez is actually going to be the one with a partner to take the women's tag team championship off of Toxic Attraction. And I feel even more strongly after tonight that that's what's going to happen, that it's going to be her and Cora Jade taking the titles off of Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. For Mandy Rose, that's the question. It could be someone like Alba Fire. It could be someone like Lash Legend if that happens. But I just feel more strongly after tonight, after the reiteration of the championship of their choice, which is what they used to do all the time with the brand split Royal Rumble winners and the Money in the Bank winner and whatnot, I just get the sense that she's going to say tag team championship, even though her character up to this point has been all about becoming the women's champion. It's just, I don't know. I just have that feeling.
You know, you could also, so it's been Roxy and Cora, and they kind of out of nowhere and for no seeming reason showed that these two are friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be working toward a tag team there. They could also have Roxanne go for the tag team championships, but she takes Wendy Chu. And she's like, Corey, you understand. Wendy's got history with them. We were running together when I first came up in this company. And maybe that's how you turn Cora heel.
Well, Cora also has history with them. You could make it that she turns heel after they lose the tag team championship bid together.
Yeah.
And that can start there. I think either way works. I just think if they go with the whole Wendy Chu has history with them, Cora drinking like, and I don't. And I think that's too obvious a plot hole to have that happen. But I still think that if you want to go with her choosing Chu, reason better than that, and or have her go with Jade and then they lose the match and that's where the heel turn happens. I think either works.
They got options.
Nate,
what do you think?
There's one person you guys didn't bring up, and that's Cindy Hartwell. She did interject herself in this whole angle tonight. So
Indy's, you know, more about Mandy, right?
Yeah, so I'm kind of wondering if, you know, Indy is the one that winds up going against Mandy, and you know, the other two go against Toxic, you know, the tag team champions. That could certainly work for me. They could also pivot and do Roxy and Indy going for the tag titles and have Cora Jade go for Mandy. But I think I like the first iteration of that better, because Cora Jade, as Mandy Rose pointed out tonight, Cora Jade's had two shots and she still hasn't been able to get the job done. So I don't feel like that would be a super fresh match, but Indy Hartwell versus Mandy, I mean, that is a bit more fresh. I feel like that could be the direction that they go. I did notice that, you know, they said tonight, you know, the winner of this match is going to, for the breakout tournament, winner of the match can challenge for either, you know, a title of their choosing. So that's a little bit vague, and that kind of does, I'm right there with you guys. I think that it probably might mean that she is, Roxanne's going to go for the tag titles, which is really kind of dumb, but whatever. We did see the winner of the Dusty Classic, who should have gone for the tag titles, go for the singles title. So, you know, I guess maybe they're just rolling with that, whatever. But yeah, that's kind of at least my two cents on it. I think it's going to be Indy Hartwell and Mandy, and then Roxy and Cora Jade versus Gigi Dolan and Jason Jane.
All right, folks, I do believe that be our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Bruce.
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I do have a report from In Your House up from Saturday if you didn't get a chance to look over that or look over the results. And I was also on the Rob Pohl show last night with Zach Haydorn. So if you haven't checked that out, go ahead and listen to that as we had a lot of good discussions as well.
Nathaniel.
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I do the NXT hits and misses, which I will have up for you guys at some point tomorrow. As I said earlier, I really, where I only started the show midway through the show, I wasn't able to get it completely done, but I will have it up for you tomorrow. And if you do get a chance, if you are VIP, take a listen to the VIP post In Your House roundtable that Bruce and I recorded with Sean Covington from the MMA Torch. Sean, thanks again for jumping in and filling in for this idiot over here that was being parental and everything over the other day. So definitely appreciate you stepping in, Sean. But yeah, we'll talk to you guys. We'll talk to you guys next time.
All right, folks. Until next week, we will see you in town.